This is Stateside on Michigan Radio.
Detroit is a city of stories. In this way, we are rich. We begin with abundance. But while much is written about our city these hard days, it is typically oriented to those who are not from here. Even local writers often pen stories that are meant to explain Detroit to those who live elsewhere. Much of this writing is brilliant, but our anthology, this anthology, is different. It is a collection of Detroit stories for Detroiters.
That is Anna Clark, the editor of A Detroit Anthology, a collection of essays and poems from Detroiters. Anna Clark and Shaka Sangor, one of the contributors, are with us now. Anna, Shaka, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Now, Anna, you call this a collection of Detroit stories for Detroiters. So explain that for Detroiters distinction. How do you define a Detroiter?
That's a good question, and that came up a lot while looking at a lot of the pieces that people put in there. There's pieces in here from people who have been in the city their entire life. There's people who have been in the city and left for elsewhere. There's people who came late. There's people who are here for a short time and left. Ultimately, it is a porous definition, but it is something that is meant to indicate that this is a book for people who have like some familiarity and connection with this place. You know, something, these are the stories that come from people who can tell them in the first person.
Mm. Now, when you thought about making this collection and you wanted it to speak to Detroiters, did that change who you looked for as contributors and how those contributors wrote the pieces?
Yeah, I mean, what I was really hoping for, I mean, there's, as everybody knows, I mean, Detroit's been in dominating headlines nationally, internationally for, you know, some time now. There's no shortage of material about Detroit, but I was interested in getting through that and having the more kind of candid, honest stories that people would tell one another, not when they're sort of framing the story as if, you know, in an explanatory fashion, but more in the sort of looser, I think ultimately more honest and more interesting fashion that you would just, the way you would tell the stories to one another.
Mm. Now, Shaka, you contributed an essay called When the Trees Stop Giving Fruit, and I'd love to have you read some of that piece for us.
Sure. I recall climbing high in a pear tree next door to the tree, the delicious fruit it offered. There was nothing I loved more than sinking my teeth into the sweet, juicy flesh of a yellowing pear. It's one of the fondest memories from my childhood. No matter what was going on in my small world, I looked forward to the fruit of one of the many trees on my street. Whether it was the plum tree in our backyard, my neighbor's peach tree, or their pear tree, I could always count on these succulent fruits to erase the pain of the moment. Then one day the trees no longer gave fruit. It was then that I realized my neighborhood had died, leaving in its wake an iniquitous skeleton that no longer resembled the healthy, vibrant place I once called home.
Later in that essay, you describe your neighborhood as the embodiment of the American dream, especially for your parents. What was it about that neighborhood that gave your family so much joy and that really captured what you thought of as that age as the American dream?
I think it was the diversity of cultures, the diversity of people. It was just a real wholesome neighborhood. You know, every morning, you know, the street would come alive with children coming out to play. And, you know, we had some of our neighbors that would come down and call my brother out the window, yo, come out and play. And then just the feeling of family, you know, it was really a well-knit with neighborhood that, you know, had just all these different type of families, Italian, Polish, Black. And to me, I think that embodied what we envisioned the American dream to be. Working parents, healthy homes, and great neighbors, and people that can entertain, and you can share just these different cross-sections of the culture. And, you know, it was heartbreaking, you know, looking back and just seeing how something so beautiful had been, you know, stripped down to just the bare bones.
Do you remember the change? Do you have a moment in your mind or a time period that you identify as being the tipping point?
Yeah, I think the tipping point was around 1986 with the introduction of crack cocaine. The neighborhood went from homeowners and families to renters and, you know, drug dealers, drug users. And it was just this marked difference that you can see, you can feel. You know, on the corner of our block, we used to have Chrysler dealership. You know, that moved out and Focus Hope moved in. A lot of the mom-and-pop stores in the community were taken over by either big corporations or people who didn't come from the community and didn't have a sense of what that neighborhood really meant to us. The small diners were replaced by fast food stores and, I mean, fast food restaurants. And so a lot of these things happened incrementally, but then there was just that point in, like, 86 where just you knew it was different. You know, houses that were once abandoned and immediately occupied, were abandoned for extensive periods of time and vandalized, and nobody thought to do anything about it. And that's when the real shift began.
When you use that image of the trees not bearing fruit anymore, is that also a stand-in for the people?
Definitely. You know, when I think about my experience of growing up and being able to climb those trees and be able to rely on them for nourishment, it reminded me of what the community represented to us, like the elders in the community were nourishing to the youth. And I think that we brought a sense of vitality to them. One of my neighbors, him and his wife, you know, I would just go sit on their porch, and I was like one of their grandkids. And this was every day, and he loved to listen to, like, the radio blogs, and they had a little dog named Susie, and we were like family. And so it was an exchange of generations, and, you know, whatever was going on in my wonderful world of childhood that they received. You know, I also got a chance to absorb some of the wisdom from him and his wife, and then plus they always had great treats. So, but it just reminded me of, like, you know, what those trees represented. And then when the neighborhood changed, people didn't know that I even saw the value in ensuring that those trees were nourished, and a lot of them died off and became more of a nuisance to the people moving in the neighborhood as opposed to something of substance and value.
Anna, many of the stories in the collection are dark. And while you can't control who reads the stories, so people may read them and say, oh, gosh, this is not a great picture of Detroit. Were you concerned about that?
Well, I think that, I mean, I definitely did notice that. And I think there would have been room for more funny stories, some of the more lighter things. You know, of course, that's as true as anything else. But it was interesting to see what people wanted to write about when given the opportunity. And I think a lot of people did want to explore these, like, really pivotal transformational moments. It seemed again and again, like, people turned to, like, stories of home, you know, and changing neighborhoods, and whether it was their own, how they experienced it themselves, or going back with their grandparents and hearing stories about it and trying to picture it. I think that what I hoped to do with this book was not to, like, make it so much about positive stories about Detroit or negative stories, but being true stories. I think the contributors themselves define what that means.
Mm-hmm. Shaka, when you think about your essay and you think about some of the other essays or poems in the collection, what do you hope people take away from these stories, whether they are Detroiters or people reading about Detroit?
What I really hope people take away from the stories is the journey. You know, I travel a lot, and you know, when people are like, where are you from? I'm like, from Detroit. And it's kind of like that moment where they freeze and they don't know what to say, because the way Detroit has been ushered into the public space has been so negative. And I think if people really understand the journey, they understand the country in a larger context.
Explain that.
And what I mean is, like, so Detroit at one time was this hustling, bustling center of so much activity, you know, entertainment, you know, obviously the auto industry, and with outsourcing of jobs and things like that had a devastating impact on a really central part of the nation. And I think when we can look at it in a larger context and understand it as not this isolated island, because that's how it feels sometimes, that people think that Detroit is just this isolated space, and not realizing so many of the great things that have came out of Detroit. You know, like, you know, Motown is the soundtrack of the world that we live in growing up. And you just think about, you know, cars, like, we started that in the D, you know, and people sometimes forget the connection to our overall history. And so I really want them to just, you know, get a glimpse of is the real life perspective, you know, the real people. I think Detroit has some of the most resilient people in the world. Of all the places I've traveled, you know, because we've gone through so many ups and downs, yet we still remain strong. And so I don't think that you can really understand that until you understand the journey that we've all gone through.
Anna, what do you hope people take away from the collection?
That the story of Detroit isn't a sociological case study or some sort of example of a lot of, like, it's not a metaphor, it is a place of lived experiences, you know, that there is a really diverse set of people who have had connections and experiences here, and that they have different tones of their voices, they often disagree with each other, they have stories that echo each other, and it's incredible, and it's exciting, and that energy of the city is really in the people who have made a home here one way or another.
Shaka, when's the last time you went back to your neighborhood?
I go frequently, actually. I was just over, and I've grown up in several neighborhoods throughout Detroit, from the east side to the west side, but I was just doing a documentary over in one of my neighborhoods in Brightmoor, which is on the west side of Detroit, And it is by far one of the hardest hit neighborhoods. And so I ride through there often, just sometimes to get a perspective of, you know, where I'm at in my life today. But it's interesting, you know, it's interesting when you take people over there and it's, you know, it's one house on the block and the rest is just overgrown shrubbery and things like that. But there's still like this sense of peace and calmness that I find in the midst of the chaos. And so, you know, I try to get back through there, you know, as frequently as possible. You know, I go in different neighborhoods in Detroit. I'm actually one of them type of Detroiter that just sees Detroit as my neighborhood because I've lived in so many different spaces and have family all over. And I just love to connect with real people. So, yeah.
Do you hope to see a reblossoming of the neighborhood you grew up in, the neighborhoods you grew up in?
I don't think that it will ever reach the level that it was back then, but I'm looking forward to something new and fresh emerging. I'm optimistically cautious. There's a lot of change taking place in Detroit that doesn't always reflect the history and the respect of those who have been there for years. And I think that, you know, in my big picture view is that we will reemerge as a different type of city, but a city that's more connected based on our history and legacy of what it means to be a neighbor, what it means to be able to go get a cup of sugar or a stick of butter next door and know that it's given with love and compassion and that, you know, these shared experiences are important to all of us, not just some of us.
Anna, Shaka talked about the diversity in his neighborhood growing up. And one of the things I hear from people is that they feel like there's only a picture of Detroit presented in the media and that it's very one-dimensional. Do you feel like you captured Detroit in its wholeness in this collection?
I think the city is too big to be captured in any one book, but I do think that the contributors to this, the writers and the photographers and the artists, put together a picture that is much more complicated and diverse and complex than I think is often seen. I feel like there's a phrase that was sort of popularized by the Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie about the danger of the single story, and she was talking particularly about where she came from. I think Detroit's had some of the same challenges of having a single story told about it, which leaves out so much else. And I feel like if this helps open up some of the space for the true wealth of textured stories from this place, then I would be glad.
Anna Clark is the editor of A Detroit Anthology, a collection of essays and poems from Detroiters. We were also joined by Shaka Sangor, one of the contributors to the collection. Anna, Shaka, thanks so much for joining us here on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.